Good afternoon. We'd like to welcome everyone to the Mesa City Council study session for October the 7th. Councilmember Duff is out of town and excused from this meeting. The first item on the agenda for this meeting is to hear a review the agenda for tonight's council meeting. So council, please refer to that agenda. I know, Mr. Freeman, you had a question on item four.
I do, Mayor. Thank you. Yeah. I'd like to invite Fire up on 4B and talk about their fire station alerting system, because I think there's some significant changes for the crews there and how the alert system. So Chief Dunn, I think, has volunteered to do that.
Thank you.
Mayor, Vice Mayor, Freeman.
This proposal here is to upgrade our T2 system at our station. The current system we've had for about 10 years. We see this as an opportunity to kind of augment what we currently have with it. We know the only part of our response that we can really control is the turnout time. And so by adding these added features to this upgrade, we're hoping it'll help us in our response times, get our crews out the door quicker.
So does that, in talking with other departments, I see it's, do other departments have the same alert system that we're meeting their standards as well?
Yes.
Or is this valley-wide?
All of the Phoenix system has the G2, as well as all the five entities that we dispatch. Okay. The color coding has been added to our multi-company stations. So if somebody's in the shower or an area where they don't have a light bar, if it's red that day, if you're on the engine and that goes off, you see the red, then you know that's your call. You don't have to go looking for a screen to see if it's your call or not.
Okay. Or somebody yelling at you to get on
the
truck.
Or somebody yelling at you. Yep.
Okay, got it.
And the larger information pads at the exits will allow our crews. So now the way it runs now, when you're in a common area, you see the call come up. And you'll see it scroll across. We're finding our crews are just sitting there in the kitchen or the living room watching to see where the address is. Now just the unit will pop up. They'll know it's for them. They'll start heading to the doors. And as they get to the door, they'll have a large display there displaying the type of call and the address.
So this will give us a quicker response
time. We're getting them moving towards the apparatus quicker. Yes, sir.
All right. Thank you. That's all I have.
Thank you. Any other questions, Council, on that item? Okay, other questions regarding tonight's agenda? No, currently, the only thing that's off of the agenda is a public hearing the public hearing on the inner loop, disauthorizing petition signatures or petitions to go out for signatures for annexation. But it's not a discussion of any of the proposed land uses. It's just regarding the annexation, I believe. Is that correct, Mr. Smith?
Correct.
Okay. Okay, Council, any questions on anything else on the agenda for tonight? All right, if not, the next item on our agenda for this meeting is item 2A, and that's to hear a presentation and discuss utility projects, including the capital improvement program. Gentlemen, welcome.
Hello, Mayor and Council. Scott Butler from the Office of Management and Budget. With me today is Jake West from Water Resources and Frank McRae from Energy Resources. Today, our goal is to provide Council with an update on utility projects that are included in our current adopted CIP for fiscal year 19-20. And then review specific short-term prioritized projects that are included in the enterprise fund forecast that will be reviewed with council in the coming weeks. So just a little bit of background. If you recall, on May 20th of this year, we presented to council and council adopted a five-year capital improvement program that included approximately $800 million in forecasted utility projects. The plan at that time, per the city manager's direction, was to return to council in the fall to provide you with an update of the projects in terms of their priority. Recently, staff has identified some definitive short-term needs within a three-year period while staying on track in terms of our long-term infrastructure objectives for the city. Some of the considerations that went into our evaluation includes the assessments that the departments do, and both Jake and Frank will speak to those later in the presentation. We have financial constraints as far as the enterprise fund and utility rates that can support those improvements. And then finally is our ability to complete projects. We refer to that as throughput. There's two things that factor into that, and Beth can speak to these two as well. But one of them is the city staff and our ability to complete projects as far as getting them ready through the design process and to construction and completion. The other thing is that's influencing it is the market conditions. Right now, with the growing economy, the contractor market is difficult to work with. And so we're competing against a lot of projects across the valley. And so all those things impact our ability to complete projects. In terms of the current fiscal year, what was approved, there's approximately $164 million. And these are, the majority of this is funded with the 2014 authorization. It includes ongoing construction at Greenfield Water Reclamation Plant for the expansion that's taking place there, Mesa Drive Phase 2, several electric substation improvements. And then there are some annual scheduled replacements that we do that are listed there in terms of addressing those on an ongoing basis. wanted to provide you with some historical background. So over the last four fiscal years, we've invested over $400 million in various utility system improvements. Much of this is part of the 2014 authorization. And then there's some other funding that goes into ensuring that the utility system can provide service. There's both the long-term financing and then cash resources. It includes the two major plant upgrades that we've talked about frequently in terms of the Signal Butte Water Treatment Plant and then the expansion at Greenfield. In addition to that, there is a lot of projects that address transmission, distribution, and collection infrastructure. And then in terms of the electric utility, there are improvements that take place at the various substations to provide service. Just to kind of highlight a few of those improvements, this is some of the work that goes on at our various plants. In terms of what's the resources that have been committed there, you can see that there's nearly $250 million in making sure that the plant infrastructure performs as it needs to. On the transmission, distribution, and collection side, you can see from the various utilities what's been committed there over the years. And each of the utilities are represented there in those photographs, including in the bottom right-hand corner, undergrounding electric utility. So there's two sides of our discussion. The first side is the capital side, and that's what we've talked about in terms of the spending that's taken place in terms of capital improvements. There's also an asset management side that the departments take care of on an annual basis in terms of making sure that the that not only do the assets perform the way that we need them to in order to provide reliable utility service, but also extend the life of the utilities to maximize what we can get out of each of the utilities. This is just kind of a brief snapshot of some of the things that they do in terms to make sure that the utility system can provide service. And each area is going to talk more specifically about what they do in the next several slides. So first I'll turn over to Jake for water.
Good evening, Mayor and Council. Jake West, Water Resources Director. A few years ago, we went through an audit through the city's auditor's process, and the basics of that audit was our asset management program. We had been doing asset management on all of our systems for years, but we didn't have a formal program, and so we've got it for the last couple of years, and this is kind of like our Bible when we're talking about projects. Each project is assigned a risk, a probability of likelihood of failure, and the consequences of failure, and so that's how we prioritize. It could be just based on the age of the pipe, or it could be locations. Is it getting older? Is it next to a hospital? Is it next to a care facility? And those such things. Those are part of our programs. We spend about $5.8 million towards water asset management, and a lot of that is in most of the distribution and collection distributions group, where you see a crew right here. They're excavating a pipe that's probably either broken or needs to be replaced. We also do, we have a very intensive water line inspection program. We started this back in 2009, where some of our larger cylinders, those large pipes that are in the ground that nobody sees until they break, and there's a catastrophic failure. So that's too late to go in and try to assess what happened to that pipe. So we started this program years ago. We go in and we have a five-year plan on every large diameter piece of pipe. And we also do, like, the new pipeline that just went in to feed the water to the Signal Butte Water Treatment Plant. Its first year of operation, we went in and inspected that pipe to make sure not only did it look good on the outside and how it was buried and how the street went over the top of it, but we got inside to look at that to make sure that that pipe was clean and it was installed as per specifications. So those are the types of inspections that we do. We also have internal programs within the utility where we do our meter replacement program, which we've been doing for years. And so we try to get all of our aging meters out before they start to fail, because those are revenues for the city. And we're very cognizant of the our firefighters and making sure that when they're out fighting fires that they have the tools that they need, that they have on the truck, but also that our fire hydrants are in working order. And we have a valve replacement program, because in our distribution system, when we do have a failure, we like to isolate it as much as possible so we minimize the disruptions to the neighborhoods. And if a valve isn't working, in my opinion, it's a coupling. It's not a valve any longer. So we've got a very comprehensive valve replacement program as well. Wastewater asset management is similar, but the difference between our inspection program and wastewater is that we have our own truck. We just got a new one this year. So we have a CC, not even a CC, it's a digital camera nowadays, where we can run it down any size or length of pipe for a certain thing. And it will take 3D photos all the way there and all the way back. Where back in the old days when it was a CCTV, you had to stop at every defect or every fault and catalog it. And it was a lot of wasted man time in the truck and doing this. So now we can take all that information back, bring it to our engineers and our support staff in the department, and then we can look at those segments, and then we can prioritize our replacement and our point repairs on our wastewater system. We also do the same thing as all of our people are certified for manhole inspections. And so we actually have a very good program that we're trying to assess all of our manholes, because manholes can fail just like streets do, and they can become dangerous for our walking, traveling, and driving public. So.
Good afternoon. So similar to the water utility and the wastewater utility, the gas and electric utilities are very capital intensive. And so once we invest those capitals, we want to make sure we're doing everything to manage them appropriately. The criteria that we use to prioritize where we invest that money and how we protect those assets is by the safety of the system, meaning the safety of the employees, the safety of the public, and the safety of our customers, the reliability and quality of service to our customers, and then how efficient we can be in providing those services. On the gas side, we're very heavily regulated relative to the electric side. The federal government has regulations that are administered by a state agency known as the Arizona Corporation Commission. So we're subject to an audit from some part of our operations with them every 12 months. The one program that I want to highlight here is called the Distribution Integrity Management Program. So it requires us to apply a probabilistic risk assessment similar to what Jake's implemented on the water side. So we look at the probability of a catastrophic event and then also the consequence of events. So it prescribes how frequently we do certain types of inspections, such as leak surveys, as well as how many times we may exercise a valve, et cetera. So very heavily regulated and very prescriptive regulations on the gas side. We spend almost $6 million a year performing a variety of these inspections, assessments. A couple years ago, we partnered with the Environmental Defense Fund and Google, where they surveyed a large part of our system, and they found that we have a very, very tight, robust system. We have a very low level of leakage in our system compared to other systems. So we feel really confident that our programs are effective at assessing our infrastructure and the integrity of our systems, And again, those plans are reviewed frequently with the Arizona Corporation Commission. On the electric side, we spend a little bit over $2 million doing similar types of assessments. We really increased the use of technology in the last several years. So the picture that you see on that slide there is with an infrared camera. And so that infrared camera can detect relatively small differences in temperatures between one device and another. That temperature difference can indicate that there's likely to be a catastrophic failure of that device. So we are using that technology to identify where we have those risks. We've changed the frequency at which we inspect certain devices. So a circuit bank that switch bank that may affect 100 customers is not as frequently inspected as one that's going to potentially impact thousands of customers. So we've increased the use of technology, and as we've gotten used to that technology and become comfortable with it, we've incorporated that into how we manage those assets and how we inspect their conditions.
All right, so Council, the next several slides address some specific projects. And just to go into a little bit of detail as far as how we balance our needs, there's three main categories that we use to evaluate things. One is on a customer demand or growth side. The second is system reliability, and then meaning the overall performance of the system. And then the third one is contractual obligations. Those are obligations that we have with regional partners. For the purpose of this presentation, we're not going to get into the specifics of the contractual obligations. We're going to focus more on the customer demand and system reliability side. But in terms of how we evaluate these, if you recall in the spring, we brought to you a CIP plan that included approximately $800 million of projects, and that's a large number. And then what we do, and we do this on an annual basis each time, we go through and we evaluate projects. There's a lot of factors that go into the schedule when projects are completed, the priority of when those projects are completed, and other things. For example, we have to make sure that funding is in place if it involves a street improvement. Before we go in and address the utility lines. Those are things that can factor into when we complete projects. The example that I'll use is Mesa Drive Phase 2. That project originally was conceptualized in 2010, 2009, 2010. The goal was to complete that project prior to the coming of the light rail. However, due to various issues along the design and then trying to complete land acquisition and real estate acquisition. Here we are in 2019 and that project is being completed currently. Both of these departments ensure that the various utility systems are still able to perform as they need to in order to provide service to the community. But those are some of the factors that go into when projects get completed. And so working with them, we've identified these projects that we believe are a priority for the next 3 years. The first couple slides deal with neighborhood infrastructure. This is as opposed to transmission mains. These are the lines that service utilities within the neighborhoods. This first one is Gilbert and Baseline. Its boundaries are the 60 and Baseline, Gilbert Road, and the 24th Street alignment in that area. The next neighborhood is in the area of Alma School and Guadalupe, bound by Guadalupe and Medina Avenue from Alma School Road to approximately the extension. These utility lines have been identified as a priority in order to meet the service needs of the community. As far as transmission mains, there are two transmission mains that we have looked at as a priority. The first one is along Broadway Road from approximately Country Club to Stapley Drive. Some of these segments are being addressed as part of the Mesa Drive Phase 2 project. But this incorporates those segments from approximately Country Club to Stapley Drive. This is a larger transmission main as opposed to neighborhood lines. The next one is in 6th Street from Gilbert Road to Lindsay. This you'll see the alignment there between University and Adobe and Gilbert to Lindsay. It's in the neighborhood around Post and Butte, Post and Junior High. And this is that transmission main to service that part of the community. The next one is one that has been, this is another one of those projects where it has come up several times, both on the utility side and the street side, and it's that intersection of Country Club Drive and Southern. This has been talked about for many years, and while the departments make sure that the infrastructure is stable and can support the utility service, the time has come to address the utility lines, and so this will allow us to do that. These project costs don't include the streets portion that will need to be included as well. So this is more on the customer demand or growth side. As you can see, these are on the southeast portion of Mesa. These two segments, Ellsworth Road and Signal Butte Road, these lines need to be in place so that as State Route 24 is completed, then those lines are already there and they can service that part of a growing part of the community. So another one that we've talked about since the spring is the reclaimed water line that has to do with customer demand and growth in order to be able to continue to provide water service to the community in terms of the growing part of the community. This is to construct a water line that would travel from approximately the northwest plant down to the southeast plant in order to convey reclaimed water out to the Gila River Indian community. That will allow us to continue to use the exchange credits that we use with the Gila River Indian community. And there's a project estimate provided there at the bottom. So this is just a summary slide in terms of growth, system reliability, and contractual obligations. The current estimate is around $260 million in terms of needs that can be addressed in a short-term definitive time over the next several years in order to continue to ensure that the utility service can provide reliable service. What questions do you have?
Thank you. Mr. Freeman.
I just have one back on either slide 18 or 19. Let's say 19. When you talk about the neighborhood infrastructure reliability, are you saying you're replacing the main lines, or you're going to down each street and replacing water services to each home?
This is a transmission line.
Just a transmission line in this
right.
area?
Right, Jay. That's what it
says. So, when you section out.
These are in the neighborhood. Let's say that you've got that neighborhood that's got 240, 50 homes or something like that. We go down and we change the main lines and we run the services back to the house. We did three or four last year. And so these are the ones that we target. We look at the ones, these particular ones. It's 1970s era pipe. It's getting close to probably at its life cycle. It's not the type of pipe from the 1950s and 60s when that asbestos cement pipe would, once it got fractured, it would blow up and tear up the streets and everything else. These are more of the nuisance ones that you'll have a crack on a main, you'll have to shut the main down, then you'll go out and make the repair. 2 days, 2 weeks, 2 months later, in the same neighborhood, you'd have another break. So these are the ones that have, I wouldn't say as severe as the big newsmakers, but I call it a nuisance pipe because we're out there quite a bit and we try to mitigate our disruptions to the neighborhoods and the families. And it just doesn't work that way when you do. And we've even seen this recently. We've done a recent quarter section project. We just got it done. 3 months later now, the quarter section to the east of it is starting to break. So those are the things that we deal with. And that's the type of pipes. You're right. It's the stuff that's in the neighborhood. It's the new valves. It's the new fire hydrants. It's the new service lines. And a new street over the trench.
And Jake, you prioritized this one too because of the school. Wasn't that part of this consideration?
Or am I thinking another? The one that was going through 6th Street, the one line one right there. Yeah, it's going through a school playground. It also goes up a little bit we're not really going to replace this, Chris, Mr. Brady. We're going to realign it because it's in an area where we can't get to it. If it were to fail, it could be catastrophic.
So that's just for council information. I mean, today it goes across school property. And one of the priorities was to bring this one forward so that we could just do what you said.
And I believe it also goes under some high power lines as well. So it's more of a project of making it safe all around, getting it out of the area where it's at in a place where we have more access to it and can maintain it.
The reason I ask that question is, you know, as you do this infrastructure improvement, and if it's in our respective districts, then we'd like to reach out to the constituents and people in our communities or districts to let them know that this work's going on. And so that's where I'm at, but I appreciate the infrastructure. So that's when I was looking at all the highlighted area. Are you doing that whole highlighted right. area, whether it's slide 19 or 18? And so you get the private contractor to come out and do that, whether it's a quad section or whatever, quarter section.
I've got it on good authority of one of our senior civil engineers that these are the pipes that not necessarily keeps them up at night, but these are the baddest of the bad with regards to the age and the type of pipe that it is and the failure rates.
All right. Thank you.
Mr. Thompson.
Jake, that was going to be my question is, do you have specific or do you track specific pipe types and vintage years that you're replacing? I know Frank does, whether it's with the M8100 or whatever yeah, it is that's out there.
Mr. Thompson, yes, that we've got a comprehensive system, our GIS layer and the enterprise GIS. We do a very good. We know that as long as the information is correct, we know the type of the pipe, the size of the pipe, its age.
Is there certain areas in town, the soil is a little more alkaline than others. Are you tracking that and you know exactly where you're having issues? Like I know along Apache Trail, there's some alkalinity in the soil there that eats up pipes pretty quick. So are you guys tracking that, keeping an eye on it, and so forth?
I'm not really sure if we are, if we aren't, or how much. I know that we are very sensitive to certain areas where there's a lot of irrigation, like flood irrigation and stuff, because that we've seen pipes fail prior to their extended life. You could have a pipe that's maybe a ductile iron pipe that hasn't been wrapped properly. We've had one fail in 8 years when it's supposed to last 30. So when we see those things, we note them, we keep them in the system, but with regards to the alkalinity and everything else, we are looking at it, but I don't know to what extent today.
I know, Frank, you got DEMP that you're probably working with that kind of quantifies all that as well on the gas side. That's, you know, looking at high impact areas or third party damage or traffic issues or whatever it may be where you have loading, different loadings and stuff like that. So I just wanted to make sure that we're taking a comprehensive look and just not at the vintage year and type of pipe, but we're taking a holistic view at replacement.
Other questions? Yes, Frankie.
Yeah, on the GRUSP line, that's not the suggested line that you all
recommend,
right?
No, that's just, excuse me, Councilmember yeah. Heredia, that's just for illustration purposes only. We're just in the beginning stages of an alignment study to see where the best quarter is, where the best greater openings are, to be able to make this as successful and I don't want to say cheap, but economically done as possible.
Sure. And isn't that also, he says customer demand, but is it contractual as well? We have a contract with
it's an agreement Gila with
River.
The Gila.
Yes, it's our exchange agreement with the Gila River Indian community. So for every 5 MGD we give them in effluent, they give us, is that right, Brian?
Four
MGD in water. So this pipeline is going to give us another, it's that next bucket of water. It's going to be able to actually maximize the agreement with the Gila River Indian community. Because as everybody knows, I don't know if everybody knows now, but GRUSP is going to be closed in probably until April 2020. So that commodity that normally would go to us as recovering or as reclaimed water and we're storing it, we're not going to get that for the next several months. So by having a pipeline, we've got that dedicated line going to where we need it, where it's best, Southeast Mesa. It's going to be the lifeline for the future expansion of the Signal Butte plant, and it's going to allow us to meet that agreement. And not only that, this water is going to be significantly cheaper than our cap rates that we're currently paying and whatever's anticipated in the future.
And just, Mayor and Council, sometimes we use the word Southeast Mesa,
yes.
which is true. But then we use Southeast Mesa again. We talk about Signal Butte and Germaine. So I don't know. This is power and baseline. So it's not, I mean, it is Southeast Mesa, but it's not.
Middle of Mesa.
It's it may be the middle of Mesa now. That's what we call it. I just want to be clear that it's going to that point, not to Greenfield or something like
right.
that.
The existing pipe ends today at the Southeast plant, which is that baseline over by the Superstition Springs Golf Course. But that's where that plant, this pipe will end, because then it's going to connect to the existing pipe that we currently have, that we take water from Greenfield, from Southeast, and get it to Greenfield. So we've already got that infrastructure there to get it to the Greenfield plant, which will then get it down to the Gila River Indian Community.
So us building this pipe, if we do end up building this, has many benefits in moving forward. No?
Yeah. Okay. And I think the way we look at it, there is a payback on this project, right? We may be investing, I don't know, we'll just use the number here, $66 million, but we'll be able to quantify how much water, new water credit, or water it'll create for the city of Mesa in our portfolio. And we'll be able to quantify if we had to pay for that in the on the current market today, or based on this very significantly reduced pricing from the Gilas, there is a significant savings, and we can calculate actually over some period of time there where we're going to recover this, whatever we'll call it, $60 million, because we're going to be able to have water provided to the city of Mesa that would otherwise would have cost us a lot more. And so this is an investment in our next bucket of water, is the way we look at it.
And that cost doesn't fluctuate, is based on the contract or?
Well, it is the Gila rate pegged. I don't know how that works. I know, how does that work? Do you know how that agreement works? Here's Brian, yeah.
Thank you.
The expert.
Yeah. Mayor, Councilor Heredia. The GRIC exchange water rate, it's based on the energy rate that we pay CAP, and that can fluctuate. And so all we're paying, like today, is $52 an acre foot. On the open market right now, it's $10,000 an acre foot. If we were to go out and try to purchase an equal amount of water that this reclaimed water line would get us.
Sure. And how much water is the delivery? What's the exchange, the total amount?
Right now, what we project, it'll be right around 13,000 acre feet of water we'll deliver to the GRIC, and we'll get back a little over 10,000 acre feet. And that's really huge. That really plays into expanding the Signal Butte plant and the growth that we're seeing out there along the technology corridor. Without this water, we're going to be maxed out within a couple years on our CAP supply that's available to us. We have the exchange, but we just need to be able to make access to that. Yeah. That's through the effluent.
Brian, this is a 100-year agreement, and we're only in year 15. Yes. Yeah, so.
We want to take advantage of it.
Yeah.
I have a question on this topic. If we're switching,
No, we're not changing topic. I think Mr. Luna has a question.
No, I had a question to Jake relative. When you're going into the school, there's disruption of service. Are you working with schools to alert them, and how does that happen?
Absolutely. Anytime we have staff going to the school, we have our meter readers. They have to get their, They got to do a background check on all of our meter readers just to go in and read a meter. But anytime that if a water line breaks or something happens in a school, we will go knock on the door, start talking to the principal, whoever needs to be there, and then work with them through the process.
So, Mayor, kind of remind you, when we're talking about the three-year program, that does not include the current year we're in. So this is effective July of 2020 mm-hmm. is when we begin. So we'll. A lot of these projects we'll have. That's why we want to present to you. They're, in their world, this is like tomorrow because it's of the design and all. But we'll be working on all these projects with our community outreach folks and talking to the school districts or the neighborhoods and with your offices too as we move forward.
Well, Mr. Whitaker and then Mr. Thompson.
A question on this contract. So you said we're in year 15 out of 100 currently. How do we get the water back to them at this point if the line isn't built? The reclaimed water. How are we sending the water today?
I think that's the point. It's not happening today. We're not able to take advantage. I think Jake says this, like he says, we're leaving water. How do you say it? We're stranded capacity because the Gilas, while that's they have the agreement allows them to have that water. They didn't have the infrastructure, Ryan, right, to bring it down to their land. I mean, they have the water, but they have the rights to the water, but not the ability to get the water to their land. Now, Brian, you explain this better than I do.
Right.
So that's why they entered into the agreement with us.
Right.
the location of the canal that the tribal community has access to, where the ag is currently occurring is down towards South Chandler. So access to that CAP water to facilitate the crops was able to be conducted by going into this effluent agreement with us. And so right now, the Southeast plant, which is at Power and Baseline and then Greenfield, currently send reclaimed water to the Grig. But the agreement ratchets up every year until we're at full capacity. Right now, we're way behind on that, but they're recognizing that, you know, it's not available. But the sweet thing about the agreement is in the event it's rainy, what have you, and they can't take the water, we can take that water to Grasp, and we still get credit as if we delivered it to the tribal community because we did have it readily available. So we're not out anything. We actually get to make maximum use of that effluent.
And also, can you clarify again on the cost on the water per acre foot? What was the comparison of the two that you said?
Well, recently one of our neighboring communities just brokered a deal to get Colorado River water, and it was $10,000 an acre foot. And so those types of deals drive the market. So if we were to go out and want to purchase Colorado River water, we'd be paying $10,000 an acre foot.
Versus instead, this water is only $52 an acre
foot? What we pay for the exchange water, because it's the Grick are exchanging their CAP supply, all the tribal communities pay is energy. And right now it's $52 an acre foot because the feds pick up everything for them.
Gotcha. So significantly cheaper, but you're giving them water back. It's just not water that we can use.
Right.
It's runoff water. You use the word effluent, but it's...
It's reclaimed water.
It's stormwater. No.
It's out of our plant.
It's out of the plant. Okay. But it's out after we've treated it.
Yes. It's
out of
the plant. Good water. It's just we haven't got past that
treated wastewater,
that hurdle not potable water. Of direct potable reuse yet.
Did we do when we talk about quantifying the return on investment for this project? Was that presented to us the last time when we actually talked about the Grick pipeline, or is that coming up? It was in the presentation. Okay, I didn't see that.
Councilor, I don't know that we talked about this difference. I think what we're waiting to do is when we get the estimate about the option, that's why we're doing the research to determine which is the best alignment to bring it down, and then we'll have a cost. Right now we're using $66 million. And part of what I want to calculate for the council, for us, is how many years will it take us to pay that back? Because now we'll have, as we get this water, it'll be a significant cost savings for us to use this water versus us going in the open market. We know we're going to need this water at some point.
Yes.
And so we want to position ourselves probably earlier than later to take advantage of that. And we think there's a real economic value. This investment in this line will bring a significant return back to the city because we'll be able to get much more water at a much cheaper rate than we can today. Can with other sources.
And once this is built, what do we anticipate this supply of water being as a percentage of all of our water?
Oh,
significant or just like a small little...
Brian, how do you answer? I don't know how you put that in context.
Yeah. This could be close to one-third of our total CAP supply.
CAP supply.
CAP.
That's not your own. CAP
right.
Represents what of the total?
So portfolio. The Eastern Canal running down basically the middle of Mesa. Everything east of that we call the Eastern Zones, and that receives treated CAP water. Everything west of that, what we call the city zone, receives SRP water. SRP water can only be used on project, and right now we're using right about half of our supply on project.
So this would be one-third of half of the total.
Right.
So a significant amount of our water will come from this.
It's for the growth, right? It's kind of for the planning purposes, especially in those areas of Mesa that are not, I call it on-project city water, that are east of the Eastern Canal. That's where we rely on well water and CAP water. We don't have access to the water behind the dams. So this helps us meet the growing demand, but whether it's new subdivisions or whether it's big industrial users. That's what this becomes an important bucket in making sure we can meet that demand.
Okay. Thanks, guys.
And I know I talked about this before, about seeing if RWCD would become our transport where we could put the water in and then suck it out down at the reclamation plant. But since RWCD is not always the most amicable group to work with, have we talked to them at all about utilizing their right-of-way to install our pipeline?
We are having very productive conversations with them. Awesome. And they have committed to making open to looking at various options, whether it's going through the canal or in the canal or alongside the canal. We're going to look at a lot of different options. I mean, we can come down Val Vista, we could come down Leisure World. There's a lot of different options to make it work. So we're going to look at all of them and bring those back to you.
Okay. I was just looking at that and I'm like, man, RWCD would be like the ideal route to,
yeah,
to
there's bring a lot of utilities so. In there. Frank's in there already. Okay. SRP's in there already. So we have to figure out what's the best for all of us.
Perfect. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Council, other questions on this topic? All right, thank you very much, gentlemen. This I was just for information. We don't need any direction.
Just so, Mayor, what this is all leading up to, we just wanted to show you, these are specific projects that you'll start seeing. They'll help us drive or help us in the development of our enterprise forecast, which we're going to bring to you soon, because we need to review with council the proposed rates going forward, and this is obviously a very important part of that. So we'll be coming back to council.
I think in 2 weeks.
2 weeks?
2 weeks to give you an update on the enterprise fund forecast, which these are.
These will now be included.
Included
there.
In that.
Okay.
Okay.
Thank you. Yeah, we just want to present it to you and so we can move forward.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Next item on our agenda is item 2B. That's appointments to the Human Relations Advisory Board and the Personnel Appeals Board. Is there? Okay.
On just for future reference, perhaps we could get, is there a way we can get like a resume to go along with these members? And this is nothing against Mr. Nielsen, but because I know him, he's a fine man. I'm just concerned about how much human resources background he actually has. He's an architect by degree, and he's a business owner for a print graphics company. I'm not sure how much human resources background he has, and if that's even a requirement for the Personnel Appeals Board. When we have our employees that are making appeals, I would hope that we would have like the best of the best sitting on these boards, making sure that that they're hearing the full story and that they understand what's going on. And so, so just for future reference, I'm fine going forward with this because I know, like I said, I know Mr. Nielsen. I know he's a fine man. But just for future, being able to see kind of the resumes to make sure that the people that we're picking are the best people for the positions or the committees they're being assigned to.
Sure, yeah, and rest assured there's a lot of vetting that goes through this prior to coming to council. We talk with city staff and the staff that man these help us review the resumes, and they help us glean, narrow it down to.
Right, my only concern is that we're approving these and not really knowing the background of the individuals. Okay. Thank you.
All right. Rest assured, several people are vetting the backgrounds before they come to the council. So is there a motion on item 2B? Thank you, Mr. Freeman and Mr. Thompson. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Thank you. Item 3 is to acknowledge receipt of boards and minutes. Is there a motion to that effect? Thank you, Mr. Luna and Mr. Thompson. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Thank you. Item 4 is to hear reports on meetings and conferences attended. Council, anything you'd like to share with us?
I'll go first.
Thank you, Mr.
Thank you, Mayor. This past week, Council Member Duff and I, we attended a community meeting in District 1, and it turned out really well. And I'd like to thank staff for their help. Also, Love Your City, the day of service, I was able to participate in two big projects. One is at the Park of the Canals, and appreciate Mark Hirschberg and his staff getting that lot of work and preparation. And the park looks beautiful, and there was a lot of cleanup done there. And then Wells' Church from Tempe came into Mesa and was delivering resource packages to neighborhoods in West Mesa. So I found that interesting to give them resources in case they needed city resources. So they did that, passing that out. Those are two things we attended. Thank you.
Great. Thank you. Frankie.
Yeah, I just wanted to also the Love Your City. I think not this past Saturday, but the 28th. Think Apple employees were out in District 3 painting some walls, and yeah, pretty interesting and great work that they did. There's other delivery of books, and I know you all were creating some little libraries as well. So it's a great project there. Also, last Thursday, me and Council Member David Luna hosted a State of Latinos in the City of Mesa with staff and community leaders at the MAC. Very productive conversation. I don't know if you want to talk a little bit, David.
No, it was well attended. We had representatives from East Valley Hispanic Chamber of Commerce, Mesa Association of Hispanic Citizens, Mesa Public Schools, Mesa Community College, Mesa Hispanic Network, and as well as Mesa Facebook in Espanol, and a lot of community members attended. It was a good conversation, and we hope to have more of these in the future as we move the city forward. And then also Food Truck Friday at Las Sendas, we had provided a lot of census information. There was a lot of interest in people wanting to know about the census, so we gave a lot of information out. So that concludes my report.
Great. Thank you. Mr. Thompson.
Yeah, the Mesa Love Your City was a really good turnout. We had a number of neighborhood groups that came out and did quite a bit. So thank you to everyone that came out for that and showed up. We also had Public Safety Night at the Desert Ridge football game, high school football game. Officer Fitzgerald puts that together every year. Really did a tremendous job this year. It exceeded expectations. Desert Ridge was the underdog going in against Desert Vista, and they ended up winning something like 44-27. So we won the toss. I was the coin. I got to flip the coin, and we won the toss. So kudos to Officer Fitzgerald and to Chief Batista and Chief Camelli for all that they did to help make it a success. Oh, and then we had coffee with a cop a couple of times, one at East Mark on Saturday. And then we also did one, I think it was Friday, at Starbucks. It went over really, really well. Had really good turnout.
I had one at Bash's. I had mine at Bash's over on Ellsworth and Brown. It was really popular. So I want to thank Jeff Cutler and his staff for being there. And it was a popular event. And we're going to have maybe pizza with the cop soon. So.
Pizza with the police would be ring a little bit.
Yeah.
All right, other things you'd like to share? I want to, Mr. Reddy and Mr. Luna and I were at the Fiesta Latina event at MCC a week ago or so, which I thought was great. And there was folks from the city helping with not just Facebook in Espanol, but also on the census. So that was a great event. Also, I appreciate Mr. Reddy has served on the board of Paz de Cristo, and they allowed me to emcee their fundraising breakfast last week, which was room was packed, and it's fun to see how well our community supports that event, and it was very successful as far as fundraising goes. So thank you to everybody who continues to support Paz de Cristo. Anything else you'd like to share with this council? All right, thank you. Mr. Brady, what does our schedule look like?
Just a reminder, we will be having a study session this Thursday, and so we'll see you then at 7:30 in the morning. Thank you.
Thank you. Rather than concluding this meeting, the next item on our agenda is to convene an executive session for the review of the city manager, city attorney, city auditor, and city clerk. Is there a motion to convene an executive session for these reviews? Thank you, Mr. Luna and Mr. Thompson. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
We will convene an executive session.